B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Oh, yeah, but he was just, that was his life.
I remember I took a public speaking class in college, and they were like, hey, when you start a public, you're speaking to a crowd, you have to have an attention getter to start out.
There's one.
So I never thought of bringing a knife.
A knife.
Jeez.
To the chest. But that was the era that we were in, you know?
That was the era.
Yeah.
610-632-0975. 610-632-0975.
Nowadays, everybody gets, you called out a little girl for going to a dance recital.
You're telling Kobe to stab himself in the chest?
Yeah, maybe.
It's coaching by Trey. 610-632-0975. You are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic WPM, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. 8 o'clock hour, brought to you by Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers. Visit paworkinjury.com. On the line with us right now, a day earlier, and we're so glad he could still join us this week, Ron Jaworski on the line with us. What's going on, Ron?
Hey, Mark, Trey, Bob, always a pleasure being with you guys, albeit a Thursday morning. We've had some travel tomorrow, so appreciate being able to get together with you guys.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? This is perfect timing because, Jaws, I was listening to you last night during your football program. Fine job here on 97.5 The Fanatic. And here's how I like to evaluate my own football knowledge. Usually, I will have a thought and I will think, Mark, you're an idiot. And then I'll listen to someone who actually knows what the hell they're talking about, like you, Ron. And you thought the same thing I did. It's going to be a close game with the Eagles coming out.
No question about it. And when I look at this game, just say from 10,000 foot view, I went through that Minnesota game last week against Atlanta. Atlanta was dreadful. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got their butt kicked in just about every way imaginable. So then I started looking at their team, and, you know, obviously it starts with Matt Ryan, but you look at their team. You know, they've got a lot of draft choices. You know, when you look at, obviously, Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and, you know, first-round picks as wide receivers. You know, you look at Devontae Freeman. This guy's had unbelievable success in his career. He's been nicked a little bit. That's hurt him. But you just look at the overall roster and say, you know, this team is pretty good. And then I say, uh-oh, their home opener. They've been humiliated on the road. They are going to be angry. You know, all those buzzwords are true. So I think this game is going to be an absolute dogfight for the Eagles. I really do. I got the Eagles winning the game, but it's going to be a tough game down there.
Why is it the Atlanta Falcons, and I can't crack this case, and I don't even know if the NFL can yet either, but the Atlanta Falcons always seems to be a team that gets a lot of hype because they have a quarterback, a very good quarterback in Matt Ryan. But they just seem like year in and year out, they're a very streaky football team.
Yeah, no question about it. Actually, I thought last week in studying that tape, the offensive line really let him down. I mean, Jake Matthews was a first-round pick, you know, a few years ago. He did not have a good game. Gives up a sack on the first play of the game. That sets the tempo. But you look at this roster. I mean, it's got a lot of very high draft choices. They're a very good football team, but there's just something about that team that, you know, it makes you scratch your head a little bit. Why isn't this team performing better on the field? But I just know the Eagles are going to get the best shot this Sunday night.
We were talking to Trey about this a second ago, or really yesterday, when he talked about the Musketeers, the three Musketeers, the receivers that Carson Wentz has in front of him. And then that's not even including the tight ends that he has. But when you do factor those in and you look at the Musketeers that you mentioned for the Falcons with Ridley and Sanu and obviously a guy like Julio Jones, I feel like, and I've been saying this all morning, you can put the Eagles' firepower up against any team in the NFL, so why should I be intimidated about what the Falcons are offering?
Not intimidated whatsoever, and I agree with you. And you look at this Eagles' offensive weaponry right now, you go, man, it is a wow. You know, as I'm going through the tape, which I normally do on a Monday and a Tuesday, the DeSean Jackson, obviously, a huge, huge factor in the game. But then when you look at the all 22, you see all the players. That's what the film is about. You see so many other guys open. I mean, you know, the second touchdown pass to Sean, it could have easily gone to Aguilar. He was wide open on the crosser. They get a 2-on-1, basically a fast break, you know, 40 yards down the field, and Carson's got a choice of who he wants to throw the football to. I mean, there were plays throughout the game where the tight ends were open. There's only one football. You can only throw it to one guy. But when you look at the tape, you can really see the explosive talent and ability of this receiving core. And I always go back to this, Trey. You know where my core football is. Those big eaters down the trenches. They were dominating people. It was awesome. People flying on their backs, you know, as the game wore on.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I think that separates us from Atlanta. I think we both have a lot of talent out there, the receiver and backfield. But what's going to separate is the offensive line play. And Atlanta's offensive line is just not up to par with giving up 7 sacks in their lead. What, they gave up 3 sacks against the Jets in the second preseason game and 4 sacks against Minnesota.
Yeah, and there could have been more. I mean, Matty Ice was under duress the entire game. And, you know, I've said it from day one this year. You know, the heartbeat of this football team is that offensive line. And once they got going on Sunday against Washington, man, they were road graders out there. And you know, I know there's a little, you know, with Malik Jackson, there's a little bit of loss on that defense side of the football. But, you know, the way Howie and Doug have built this team, man, you know, they want those guys in the trenches. And that's been the difference maker for the Eagles over the last few years. They're winning, you know, where you get dirty.
Charles, do you feel like this offense is going to have to carry this team, that they're good enough to overcome maybe the deficiencies that the defense is having out there?
Yeah, I really do, and I think you're probably going to see, you know, this defense give up more points than you would expect. And I think it's also going through a little bit of a transition. You know, through the preseason, we didn't see anything, not only from the Eagles, but for 31 other teams. You don't see anything. I really didn't know what to expect from this Eagle team defensively. I know we brought in Malik Jackson, but now he's out, and I thought he'd be a huge advantage because he's a guy that can really create some one-on-one advantages for you in the trenches, but we don't have many more. But the thing that kind of caught my attention, you know, at the last cutdown was the Eagles kept 5 safeties. And it kind of was a precursor to what I thought how they're going to play defense. Well, lo and behold, in week one, 95% of the snaps, guys, they had 5, 6, and even 7 defensive backs on the field. So their base defense now is nickel. Then they go to 6 defensive backs. As I said, there's 1 snap of 7 defensive backs on the field. So it's kind of a little transition to how I believe they're going to play. And I think it's going to take a little time for everyone to adjust to this style of defense. Now, they played a lot of nickel last year, but 95% of the snaps, 5, 6, or 7 defensive backs on the field is a very, very high number.
That is absolutely incredible. Jaws, and the other part of this is obviously Carson Wentz being that guy that is in charge of distributing that one football. We talked about this in the preseason a little bit, but it's hard for me to think of a wide receiver and quarterback that have never played together being as on the same page as Carson Wentz and DeSean Jackson. Their chemistry is just there.
It actually was pretty remarkable. And you know, the deep ball, it's kind of easier, you know, to adjust. But some of those old cuts he's running the outside, those require, you know, really precise timing. And they had it. They had it. This is a group that's, you know, been together through training camp. There was no preseason action, but it clearly was there. And, you know, that's a very, very good sign. And oh, by the way, I thought Carson was phenomenal. And you know, when we spoke Friday, I was concerned that he had not played in the preseason. Mm-hmm. You know, he had not taken any hits. He had not been involved in the speed of the game, you know, since all the way back to, you know, whatever it was, week 13 or 14 last year. I'm thinking, oh boy, this might be a little rusty start. Now, the team had a rusty start, but it wasn't on Carson, and I thought he had a tremendous game. And one thing that really showed up, in my opinion, was a maturity playing the quarterback position. And there were a couple plays, in fact, both DeSean touchdowns. He did a really good job of manipulating the secondary. If you look closely, you can see him looking left, looking left, looking left. He's keeping that safety away from DeSean Jackson. So that eye movement, that eye manipulation, moved the safety out of the area he wanted to go. And then, of course, it's up to DeSean to beat the coverage, and he did. So I saw a maturity in Carson's game week one. His movement in the pocket, I thought, was very, very good. It wasn't to run. It was to throw. That pocket movement, staying on balance, and delivering the ball accurately. So if your feet are set under you, you're going to throw the football more accurately. So the mechanics were very good week one.
Charles, it's always interesting, and you hit on it a little bit. You said that there were a lot of guys open, and the way you're talking, he hit the right open guys, meaning Carson Wentz. But what did it look like everybody out? Were the guys that we think are spectacular in Ertz, in, you know, Dallas Goedert or whatever, were those guys open also? Did he have a plethora of things to look at when he went back?
Yes, you know, it's not like every guy was open every play, but there were other options. And I think for the most part, I thought Mike Rowe did a really, really good job, the offensive coordinator, in designing the offense. Again, I did not know what to expect week one. You just don't know anymore because you don't see anything in the preseason. But as the game wore on, he kind of found a set with the 3-by-1 set. He had 3 wide receivers to the right, 1 either a tight end or a wide receiver to the left. and he kept getting a quarters or a split safety look early in the game. But once he was able to dial that in, the two touchdown passes came on that formation. Three wide receivers to the right, mm-hmm. DeSean Jackson at number two, and actually Carson audible on one of the plays. So, you know, the play calling was very good. They broke down the Redskins' defense quickly in what they were doing, and they attacked it very well. So you got to give Groh some credit. He had a nice game plan to attack.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, got to give you credit, Ron Jaworski, because you had quite the game plan last night. Ramblewood Country Club for the setting of the show. And also,
we have a blast, man. Barrett Brooks and I just, you know, Trey knows. I get along with mm-hmm. offensive linemen.
You know where your bread's buttered when it comes to those old linemen.
Hey, you're damn right, man. And Barrett has such a big personality. We just talk ball and have fun, and people love it.
But yeah, I got to say this. Your Soul Squad's going to be looking pretty good. I just was at the debut of the new video board at the Wells Fargo Center.
Oh, my God, yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. That is going to be looking. I can't wait to watch. Obviously, we'll be watching Flyers, Sixers, and all that. Soul going to be looking pretty, actually, as a matter of fact, on that video board.
I'm already worried, Mark, our players will be looking up that board rather than the field. You know?
Some players will use that to see who's not near them. Sometimes. Right, go ahead. One more time, your prediction for this weekend.
I've got a 31-30 Eagles over the Falcons. Got it by one.
There we go. Ron Jaworski, thanks so much for being flexible. Safe travels to you, my man.
All right, man. Thanks, guys.
Great Ron Jaworski. I did something yesterday where I forgot my phone. And I was going to the Eagles locker room.
Like, did you feel naked?
Totally. I felt like, you know, just, you know how you feel. You feel like you don't have anything on you. You're like, and then the first thought I have is like, oh, I'll call my phone and see if it's in the car somewhere. And it's like, no, idiot, you don't have your phone. But I go in the Eagles, the media building, the media house, and I started going through the record book.
Because I don't have nothing else to do.
Bored out of my mind.
Not going to scroll Twitter.
I don't want to be left alone with my idiot brain. So I just open up the record, and I'm just things just don't occur to me. Like the Ron Jaworski, Harold Carmichael era.
Yeah.
I mean, Trey, you talk about Iron Men.
Uh huh.
Like those guys played all the time.
Yeah.
Like, was there a game they played?
Yeah.
Like Harold Carmichael is a wide receiver. It holds the record, I believe. Or maybe he did. I think he's second or third on the list, maybe, for most consecutive games played. John Dorenbos, I think, holds the record now. It's like a long. Okay, don't look at me like that when I say John.
Well, Carmichael held the NFL record for a long time for consecutive games catching a pass.
Oh, right. But yeah. In terms of just playing in the game.
Right.
A wide receiver? Like a guy that's taking shots?
Yeah.
That's pretty.
Every once in a while, he takes a shot, right, Trey?
Who?
Wait. Wide receivers.
Yeah, no, he taking a shot.
Okay.
Yeah. My favorite Harold Carmichael story post-career.
Yeah.
Catching passes at practice. And it was just like, man, I may be 65. My hand's still 22.
There you go.
610-632-0975. Coming up in a second, we're going to jump back into that Eagles conversation as well as the Phillies because Dallas Keuchel started against them last night. We got Jack in Schuylkill County. We got open lines after that, 610-632-0975. And also, a little thing happened that's a good thing for college athletes in the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
Time of the Fanatic, 8:12.
Farsetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
Coming up later this hour, let you hear from Brandon Graham again. He was mic'd up during Sunday's victory over Washington, and it was just as entertaining as you would have thought it was. As you think it would be, I guess. He's a very entertaining cat.
Yeah, he
absolutely
is.
610-632-0975. Jack, I assume in Schuylkill County. What's going on, Jack?
Guys, what's going on? Just calling in for my daily call on my commute. So I was thinking the same thing that you were asking about why it seems like they're such a streaky team. So I looked it up last night. In the last 10 years, the Falcons have been in the bottom half of the league every year in at least two of these three statistics. Yards given up per game, red zone efficiency, and goals scored or scores in the fourth quarter and scoring given up in the fourth quarter. So every year, they're either letting teams walk all over them, not scoring in the fourth quarter, and letting teams score in the end. So that's why they're always so streaky. They're always giving up points in the clutch situations.
Yeah, it's like with the Matt Ryan era, if you look at his seasons, going back to 2008, you have an 11-win season, then a 9, then a 13-10-13, then 4-6-8, then 11-10, and then now last year 7, and then this year 0-1. It's just like... For a team that has a quarterback and a very good quarterback, I guess what your point is yeah, sometimes they're a better team, but those clutch moments are kind of when things go by the wayside for them.
Exactly. And an unbelievable stat that I think they only talked about once last year, when it comes to the red zone with their best weapon, Julio Jones, Matt Ryan is 1-for-20. That's nuts! Your primary receiver and you can't get a touchdown? It's insane.
How did he get the name Matty Ice again?
From Natty Ice in high school.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, he was clutch at BC.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It was college name.
Yeah.
All right.
But I think it had something to do with Natty Lights.
And then the other thing, it always seems like we score, our games are really close with them. We basically play them like a division opponent. We should beat them, but it's close. In the last 15 years, only three or five of our games have been, there's been a difference of one score or one touchdown separating. It's unbelievable.
That is,
we play them like we play the Redskins.
Right, yeah, you would think it's like a divisional game, but fortunately in the Doug Peterson era, the Eagles coming out on top, especially in the, obviously, what, the divisional round of the playoffs 2 or 3 years ago now, and then last year, starting out the season on Thursday night against the Falcons, where there was a lot of sputtering, and they were able to get things going with a little Philly.
Yeah.
A little Philly special.
A little trickery.
The Julio Jones inefficiency in the red zone is quite perplexing.
We used to say that about DeSean.
DeSean is never going to get better there.
No, that's been his game, but he's also
Julio
not,
Jones is 6'5".
I was
going to
say,
five.
He's not the big body that Julio Jones is.
Yeah.
He's not the guy that, like, for instance, when we watched him in the NFC Championship game, we watched Matt Ryan roll to the right. Like, everyone knew the play was going to Julio
Shout
Jones.
Out to Michael Kendricks on that play.
Yes. Getting that penetration.
Hell yeah.
But then they cut the field in half. The route, I believe, was still Julio Jones to the corner.
It was, yeah.
But, so they cut the field in half.
Old Green Goblin said, bro.
I got you. 610-632-0975. We have our Twitter poll question out there brought to you by Window Nation. And this is evidence that you cannot get a 100% poll.
No.
And it has to do with those fighting Phils, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Wilson, what do you have for us?
This morning we asked, should the Phillies have signed Dallas Keuchel? We have just under 2,000 votes so far. 87% say yes. So not as high
Shame
as we were
Shame on you,
thinking.
13%.
How many burner accounts do Matt Klentak and Andy MacPhail have?
That's exactly what I was going to say. We have no responses from the people that actually voted no. But Joe Cornick tweets in. He said, the no votes include Matt Klentak, Andy MacPhail, Nick Pavetta, and Vince Velasquez. So I think he's correct.
All right. That's next level thinking right there. That's next level thinking. Thank you, Sam. I mean, to me, it's just an obvious thing. You have the game last night, and I know people want to look at an example where maybe your starting pitcher gets shelled, and then Dallas Keuchel is pitching for the Braves, and he just looks spectacular. No, last night was a close 3-1 game.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw how good Dallas Keuchel was. And when you listen to Gabe Kapler after the game, he was very tight-lipped, very matter-of-fact about how good a pitcher Dallas Keuchel was. Because he knows that this team could have very much used Dallas Keuchel throughout this season. And the people that are voting, no, you're just contrarians. You're just trying to mess up our poll, our chance at 100. So, to me, I listen to that, or I watch that, and I go, this is a guy that there's no excuse that you should have had on your squad. And when you make the half-ass deals that you made at the trade deadline to try to get some help in your rotation to maybe push you over the edge? Yeah, no. And I know Klentak said a couple of weeks before the trade deadline, no, we got to rely on our stars to really make a difference. Our JT Realmuto, who has done that. Our Rhys Hoskins, not so much. Our Bryce Harper has done that. Yeah, you got to have those guys make sure they step up. Aaron Nola has struggled recently. But how about you, Matt? What happened a couple months ago? What happened with a guy that now has 16 starts under his belt this season? And 11 of those are at least quality. He's got a sub-380 ERA?
Mm-hmm.
And he comes into the
365.
365.
Yeah.
He comes into your ballpark last night and not only takes care of business against your squad, 6 innings, 1 run? He also comes into the locker room after the game, into the clubhouse, and he gets asked about, hey, you know, any hard feelings basically towards the Phillies for not picking you up. And he goes, well, I just know that if I was them, I'd have regrets.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
You could have called me. I was here.
I was available.
You could have had this.
Yeah. Right?
Basically, he was wearing the high slit skirt going, this could have been yours.
I just did it again.
He flaunted.
Bob was just like, I got the good stuff.
I got
some. Bob just did.
I got what you need.
I don't know about all that.
Yeah, Klentak's like, yeah, you shake that walking out to the mound.
And you know what else? It wasn't like, that was typical Keuchel last night. Like he went six innings. He threw a lot of pitches, but he just battles. Every night he battles, and he keeps you in games. And last night, you know, only gave up the one earned run. Phillies only had five hits altogether. But that's just who he is, and that's what he gives you almost every start. How they couldn't see that is beyond me. When you have a depleted bullpen that's injury-riddled, why can't you get an inning gobbler who's going to give you good outings? Is when he's sitting right there in front of you.
He was there for the taking.
All it cost was money.
And I'll say it. I've been saying it all morning. I'll say it again. When the Phillies saw that the Braves picked up Keuchel, you have to know that they got extremely uncomfortable.
Didn't, then something's wrong.
Like I very much doubt they were like, well, good luck. He's got nothing.
They didn't even think about this. They didn't even send someone to watch him pitch.
That shows me that either they're just dumb.
It's negligent.
Or okay, so I'll incorporate that as a same thing.
I don't
thing.
Think it's stupidity. I think it's negligence.
Negligence is stupidity
there's
a, to a degree.
There's a bit of stupidity in negligence, sure.
Right, okay, I got
but
you.
But I think that they were smelling themselves.
Well, I see, that's why I asked the question. Did they get so bullish on Zach Eflin's start to the season?
Perhaps.
That they were like, oh, we'll be good with just Nola and Eflin.
I mean, they entered the season with Nick Pivetta as your number two. So,
that is just,
yeah.
When Nick Pivetta came out to start the season with that mustache, you should have just been like, can we sound Keuchel now?
Yeah.
That was really Nick Pivetta being like, you should really get that Keuchel fella because I ain't going to last. 610-632-0975. It's something that I can't believe it. For a team that had you believe with Bryce Harper that they were all in, they come up short. And by also, well, by the way, getting a good shortstop, and Gene Segura has underwhelmed a little bit this season throughout.
Yeah.
But you also get the best catcher in baseball. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just about Bryce Harper. It was about really bolstering the lineup as a whole. And not just bolstering the lineup, but getting a great defensive catcher, the best in baseball in JT Realmuto when it comes to that. You're only all-star. And you mean to tell me you just ignore the rotation? Especially when there's an opportunity to get almost a pro-rated deal with a guy like Dallas Keuchel? A missed opportunity is the easiest way to put that. Rashid, West Philly, you're on 975 The Fanatic. What's up, Rashid?
Hello, how are you? Good morning.
Good, man.
Now I wanted to speak about this upcoming game for Sunday.
Go for it.
I'm hype about it. I hear a lot of people saying they think that Atlanta going to win. I don't know why would they say that. I feel like we primed, especially if we think that who we think we is, I feel like we should go down there and get the win. And I feel like we should be dominant and doing it.
See,
I feel like
Rashid, more people need your attitude. Because I'm hearing way too many timid people talking about this game. Do I think Atlanta's terrible? No. Do I understand that their passing attack can be pretty incredible with the guys that we've been mentioning all morning? Yeah, obviously I acknowledge that. But why should I be afraid of their? They should be fearing our offense.
True. And then the thing that people are failing to realize, I think we're so to get the lead. And they couldn't stop the run. Kirk Cousins threw the ball only 10 times, and they basically ran the ball down their throat. I feel like we could do the same thing. I feel like our offensive line could be extremely dominating against their defensive front. And then not the only thing that people not taking in the fact is that the offensive guard got hurt for them, and they playing a rookie. And Fletcher Cox going against a rookie. So I feel like he should have a field day there as well.
Yeah, well, that's one thing Trey got into, and we'll do another installment of Trench Talk a little bit later in the show, but that was one thing that Trey said that the Eagles have to be able to exploit.
Mm-hmm.
That and the big tell on their offensive line, being able to take advantage of that is something that the Eagles have to exploit.
And my thing is, I got one question for Trey. Now, Trey, if you're a new starter coming in and you're going against a perennial Pro Bowler and, like, he sets you up for one move, and then you're expecting that, and then he can do so many different things to you, especially with Fletcher with his power and his being able to just the like hold up. Like, I mean, you can't move them. So, like, what's your thoughts about that, Trey?
I mean, you know, it depends on the player. You know, I have been in a situation where I had to go up against Derek Thomas. That was one of my bigger, you know, bigger names that I had to go up against. And, you know, it worked out a little differently for me. But, you know, when you got someone like Fletcher Cox on the inside, that's a totally different game with the way he comes with a power rush and can give you some speed as well.
True. And then I look at, like, Timmy Jernigan getting this opportunity with the injury with Malik Jackson. And I feel like he was saying that he wanted to get that guaranteed money that he lost back, and I think this is opportunity to show that he could be a starting defensive tackle. And then, like, he did a hell of a job in our championship year, so I feel like it shouldn't be too much of a downgrade from Jackson. But my thing is, I worry about the depth behind him. I just hope that the guy that we just signed is able to give him some valuable snaps. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I got us winning though big this weekend though.
Oh, that's big! You have a blowout.
At least 10 points. I'm thinking maybe 38-20 or something like that.
38-12. That's more than 10 points. Thanks for the call, Rasheed. I appreciate it. Now, I will say this. I'm not that bullish, but I do see the Eagles winning this game. But I don't understand, I guess, the people that are looking at this game as if it's going to be a reality check for the Eagles. Like, could it? Sure. I mean, that's why you play the game, blah, 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 whatever cliche you want to throw. But I go into this game.
Any given Sunday, Mark.
That's what I've heard, per reports, but when I look at this Eagles team, I see a team that's going to be a juggernaut of a team. And I know people want to evaluate how they played against the Redskins and say, oh, well, a better team would have beaten them. Well, yeah, a better team probably would have beaten them in the opening week of the season when they were knocking the rust off. But they weren't playing a better team. They still got that victory. They fought back and they won. They knocked the rust off. So now you're going up against that better team. It's going to be a challenge. I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk. No. I see this being within a touchdown this game. But at the same time, I have confidence that the Eagles, if they're the last team with the ball, they're going to win that game.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't trust them. Yeah, here's where my trust doesn't come in. I don't trust the defense if the other team has the ball last play. You know, and that bothers me. A little lapse on defense, for some reason, weighs heavy on me, and I'm just not convinced. Now, as I asked Jaws, I think this Eagles offense can outscore other teams, and that might be what we see for the first half of the season until this defense gets, you know, its motor running correctly or gets on track. But I think they win a tight game this weekend. I think they put up some more points again, which means I think the defense is going to let up some more points again.
A shootout.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
I'll tell you right now, and we're going to try to get Fred Gadelli on with his producer Sunday Night Football tomorrow. He's the guy that's calling all the shots in the truck, what they're going to get on the field and all
that
stuff.
I like their new camera angle. They tried it out last year.
It was pretty baller.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Well, I think they used it a little bit.
They did. They tried it out last year, I think, in one game.
Oh, I was going to say in the Hall of Fame game.
It might have been that, too. Okay. I think they experimented with it once last year.
Yeah, it is pretty awesome.
It's good.
See, one of the things is people always want to see the whole field, but one of the most common ways to do that is when cable cam or sky cam is over the quarterback's shoulder, which is how I used to watch the games in the truck, which was awesome.
Yeah.
But you can't tell the distance.
Exactly.
Which is what it's all about in football.
So this is like off to the side angled.
Yeah. But you still almost get to see all 22.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to do it full time, but a little bit here and there is nice.
It lets you see how the play develops, though. It's like in hockey, if you sit behind a goal 20 rows up, you can see how plays are developing as guys are coming into the zone. It's pretty awesome.
My favorite is when you're at like a bar or in a big party setting and people are like, well, throw a dagger, he's wide open. I'm like, are you seeing a different angle than I am? Because you can't see past like the tight ends here.
How big is your screen that you're watching on? That's how I think of it. But so we'll talk to him hopefully tomorrow and just get kind of the storylines going into this game. But one of the major storylines is going to continue to be the connection from Carson Wentz to DeSean Jackson. Because if you're a broadcasting crew covering the Eagles, you love their high-flying offense. You love an offense that can be a three-run home run type of offense, right? The grand slam type of offense, and that's what DeSean Jackson brings playing for you. So Carson, yesterday, when he was addressing the media, aside from just talking about calling his buddy Nick Foles, seeing how he was doing after the injury, which hit me right in the feels and everybody else, except
how's everyone doing?
One of the things they got into was...
Better than you, Nick. My clavicle's in place.
You poor bastard.
Yeah, that sucks. That weirds me out, the collarbone.
Well, this is the second time. The first time was Whitney Merciless, if I'm not mistaken, down in Texas, in Houston.
It's a weird bone to break.
That was the second shot.
It's pretty important to everything.
We're going to need a doctor to call in and just confirm whether or not
is the clavicle.
I'm going to call my friends at Rothman.
And I'll be like, there you go.
Is the clavicle important to things?
You know, head bone connected to the hip, but whatever it might be. It's, well, how important is the clavicle? But here's the thing. When it comes to... damn it, guys. Get me all kerfluffled, whatever it might be. Carson Wentz yesterday talked about how important it is to have a guy like DeSean Jackson on his offense.
You could argue to some extent an element that we've missed at times over the years, and just to have that be able to open up some things for everybody else, open up some things for him as well. You know, he's not always just taking the top off, but the thing that I like, you know, we were creative with how we got to him. You know, it wasn't necessarily the exact coverage that you take shots necessarily, but the way we were able to design those plays. So we're going to find ways to get him involved down the field.
The one thing that is really impressive to me is how DeSean Jackson described his, I believe, first touchdown with Carson Wentz on Sunday, which was that he wasn't the first option. Mm-hmm. That the safety basically dictated where Carson was going to go, right. And rightfully so. Uh-huh. I mean, that's a good quarterback reading the safety. But the ball was supposed to go. Number one target on the play was Alshon Jeffrey. That's not how it developed. So Carson made the adjustment, went to his second progression, went through his read right there, and saw DeSean Jackson open. Next thing you know, touchdown Eagles. So having that as a safety valve, knowing that you're not going to ever be able to overthrow the guy, you can stare down that number one target, and if it's not there, you know you could spin it around, as I think Jaws was saying, and Bob, you as well, that he'll take time. Carson will take that time staring down that number one target if he thinks he's going to have an opportunity going into the play to have DeSean Jackson open. Because if he knows he's going to have him open downfield, but he wants to take a shot at Alshon, he's going to watch that safety go over. And if he doesn't react because of DeSean, then he can stay with his target right. That he's locked in on. But if that safety stays with him, he knows football 101, you just go to the guy that's open down the other side of the field, which in that case, with the adjustment, was DeSean Jackson.
TV did a great job where they kept the camera on Carson's eyes. And you saw Carson, you had DeSean to the right, and then Alshon was breaking out to the left, both going deep. And Carson looks, he sees Jackson open, but he does do that little look over to Alshon to make the safety, just as you said, Mark, commit to that side. My favorite pass between the two of them, when you talk about connection, was there was one play where Carson stepped up in the pocket, was looking left, looking left, looking left, and then just turned right and boom, hit DeSean Jackson with like a 12-yarder where, remember, he caught it and he just drug his feet in ever so slightly. Yeah. I thought that, to me, that was the play. Like, wow, these guys really are on the same page. Didn't have to look at him. Didn't know anything. Put it right there. DeSean, nice catch right there on the sideline. Boom. They're going to be, obviously, after the first game, but they could be something really special this year, even without that long ball.
All right. Now, one thing, Bob, that we can't do is we can't get into the mindset of a player on the field while the game's happening. We just can't do it. We haven't been there.
No, we have not.
Trey has been there many times.
Mm-hmm.
Many times consecutively, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And Trey, you like to take us a little bit behind the scenes when you do Trench Talk.
Uh-huh.
And we'll do that again before the show lets out.
Did you ever get mic'd up, Trey?
No.
I would have loved to have heard it.
Yeah, no.
Could you give us a sample? No, I'm just kidding. a little sample of that. But Brandon Graham got mic'd up. And one of the awesome things is that Brandon Graham is one of the most fun guys you could talk to in that locker room.
Thank you, 975.
No, Brandon. Thank you. And when they mic'd him up, I wasn't sure what to expect. If he would be that same type of guy, the fun-loving guy that he is in the locker room, or if we hear some kind of wild animal on the football field. Well, I think we got what we bargained for when the NFL mic'd up Brandon Graham over the weekend. 610-632-0975. We'll let you hear that coming up in a few here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Coming up around the top of the hour, we're going to get into what's going to happen with the Eagles this weekend. We'll continue that conversation. We're going to get into a little bit of trench talk with you, Trey. We'll revisit that. And we'll let you hear from Brandon Graham, who was mic'd up during Sunday's win over Washington. And Brandon Graham is almost just as giddy as you would imagine. because it is that entertaining. He is that type of personality. But I wanted to mention this to you real quick, Trey. Did you see what happened in California?
Yeah,
with the college players?
Uh-huh.
So the state of California is saying they won't hold it against college players to make money. Not be paid, which has been my argument. You shouldn't pay college athletes. Like a university should not pay a college athlete. However, you should be allowed as a college athlete to make money off you. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I'm sorry, in this society where we applaud people that make money with capitalism, you have a name and you can make money off it with doing an autograph signing.
Like
whatever
the Ohio State kids, they got tattoos because they did some autographs.
Yeah. Okay.
What's the problem here? Corrupt, awful NCAA?
Now, I did say police it by maybe the NCAA becomes, or the school, the university becomes the sports agent. They act as the sports agent, where if you want the guy to appear at your place, you have to go through the school. School gets a cut, kid gets a cut, everybody makes money, and there you go. You don't have to worry about paying every single athlete that is playing for your university. Because let's face it, the basketball, the football programs, they're bringing in bank. Where the other smaller programs, they're not. So why am I going to divvy up that money?
Right.
Why even divvy up any money when it comes to having somebody else pay them? So the state of California is now saying, we don't care. Go ahead and do it. But really, isn't the governing body the NCAA? Mm-hmm. Isn't it still their club?
You would think.
I applaud California for even putting it out there. I don't know if it's going to have a major effect on things, unfortunately.
Yeah. Because I think that what they're going to do to try to keep everybody in line is to say, all right, well, if you're going to allow this, then you won't be able to compete in these tournaments. But at the end of the day, man, it's all about maximizing your money-making potential, and that's just in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if a player isn't allowed to do that, then, you know, they're going to look to do it somewhere else.
I got paid in college to be in radio, working for the university. Like, I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
I wasn't a college athlete. And I'll tell you right now, my little college radio station, WRFT, shout out, wasn't making any money. It's not like we sold advertising. But I got paid by the university to be in radio. That's what I'm doing with my life now. These guys that are going to college are most likely going to go on to the pros, the ones that can really make that bank. What about the guys, like, for instance, even in the Eagles right now? If I would do appearances with the Eagles, and I did that a few years ago, it wasn't like Carson Wentz was coming out to do an appearance. A lot of times, the weekly appearances are the guys that are like the end of the bench type guys.
Uh-huh.
They're making money by going out and making appearances. College, a guy at the end of the Duke bench who's not going to make any money off basketball later in his career, he can go out and make some money just by going out there appearing. Now, he's going to Duke, so he's, you know, probably be a doctor somewhere. I don't know what he's doing. But whatever, law, I don't know. But, you know, the guy at the end of the bench of the college roster can go out and make some money for himself. Where's the harm in that?
Yeah, and if California allows it, it's a hell of a recruiting tool.
Yeah, really.
Exactly.
Because
All you want to do is maximize your money-making abilities.
Why not?
Why not?
Early.
Yeah.
Danny, South Philly, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Danny?
Do you guys see my mouthpiece?
I'm not. You got my chicken sandwich? I'm going to come get that chicken sandwich.
Fellas, that audio is so funny. I was dying.
We're going to play it again after the top of the hour.
Good. Well, good. Perfect. Yeah, it was good stuff. So I just want to make a point. I'm really excited about the Carson to Deshaun connection. I was getting excited in preseason when they mic'd Carson up at practice, and he was like, you know, I want to throw 60 yards to Deshaun. I want to give the people what they want to see.
Yeah.
And that's what the people want to see, and I think it's a beautiful thing. But, you know, and I don't know if you guys know the meme I'm talking about, but you know the template where it's the guy who's out in the street, he's not looking at his girlfriend.
Yes.
Whistling at another girl.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw that meme with, like, Zach Ertz is his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And Dawn is the other guy.
Yes, it's great.
It's great. But so I'm excited about that. And I had, like, a quick Nick Foles point that I wanted to make. So I'm not, like, a Folesian guy or anything, but my friend and I were talking about this the other day when he got hurt. Is like, what if it's, like, the ring? It's like this cycle where the quarterback gets hurt and the backup has to come in and get a Super Bowl. Because the Jaguars have never had a Super Bowl like us. Mm-hmm. So what if it's like this crazy cycle of the quarterback has to get hurt and Nick Foles has to pass it on to another quarterback now?
Yeah.
I don't think Minshew's going to win you a Super Bowl. What's his name? Is that Minshew?
Minshew? Minshew?
I don't see him winning a Super Bowl.
I don't think so either.
No. It's a little early, Stu.
I still don't think that beats out the hypothesis of the Patriots not being allowed in the playoffs because of Antonio Brown.
He looks like he stepped right out of a trailer park. Gardner Minshew.
Somebody had a side-by-side of him and Brady, and it said one of these guys is a 23-year-old quarterback, and one of them is 42. Brady obviously looks the 23-year-old. This guy looks like he's 42. He's got, like, his hair's thinning a little bit. He's got a bad mustache. No body frame whatsoever. Yeah, it was pretty
Gardner
cool.
Minshew.
And I know I was kidding about it earlier, but, I mean, I think it did grab a lot of people in the feels. When Carson Wentz said yesterday, he reached out to Nick Foles.
Yeah.
Say, hey, what's up, dude?
I think Gardner Minshew was the third-ranked PFF quarterback of week one. I think it was Lamar Jackson, Dak.
Here's why you can't say that.
Gardner and Wentz.
Because we spent time praising Brandon Brooks for being the highest-rated right guard in all of football.
When you're good, you're good.
When you're good, you can have weeks. I remember one week, Nick Foles threw four touchdown passes in one game, and Pro Football Focus had him as something like the 10th best quarterback that week. And no, not everyone threw six touchdown passes that week. But they didn't like that he got the ball essentially every time in the red zone. He didn't, like, drive the ball down the field each time. That was their rating. And
isn't one of their subjects, like, possible interception ball or something like that?
It is, yeah.
If the defensive back would have turned his hips just a second sooner, he could have had an interception. So, points taken away.
Yeah, you can't have that.
Yeah, it's weird.
They should just ask Trey, what's the rating? And Trey's like, pass or fail, forget numbers.
Yeah.
You're either in or you're out.
Yeah, that's it.
610-632-0975. There was one more college thing, Trey. I remember you wanted to share about Ohio State, was it?
Uh-huh.
What are they trying to do?
Oh, yeah, because they were trying to trademark the... With the Ohio State?
Literally?
Literally. Yeah, and...
That's our word now.
Yeah, and it was shut down.
Go figure.
Good.
Who would have knew? I guess not. I guess they didn't think so.
Well, the patent office is really bringing it these days because LeBron James lost his battle.
To Taco Tuesday?
Yeah.
Thank God. Justice has been served.
Good on you, Patent Office.
You're listening to 97.5, the Fanatic WPN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast, 9 o'clock hour, brought to you by The Baxter. Dumpster in a bag, get yours today at Home Depot and Lowe's. For details, go to TheBaxter.com. Jam-packed 9 o'clock hour. We're going to have another installment of Trench Talk. We're going to talk some Phillies conversation. I have some Phillies conversation as well regarding Dallas Keuchel starting for the Braves last night. For some reason, the Phillies just couldn't fit in Dallas Keuchel. We'll talk through the payroll in a second here. But before we get to your trench talk, Trey, because you always do a great job of taking us behind the scenes. You make us feel as if we're in the film room itself, breaking down film with everybody else here. Brandon Graham literally took us onto the field. As the Eagles released on their Twitter account yesterday, they mic'd up Brandon Graham, and it's about 3 minutes and 30 seconds of Brandon Graham mic'd up throughout the game. Now, some of it doesn't play well on radio, so we condensed it to the best 60 seconds of Brandon Graham mic'd up against Washington's win on Sunday.
Yeah, boy! I heard you passing out them Popeye chicken sandwiches today! Extra spicy! Ah. Oh! Let's go, boy. Everything, everything all day. Let's go, everything all day. All day. Dang, them boys, they just be coming out of nowhere. Yeah, I see a mouthpiece. Mouthpiece, mouthpiece. Hey, mouthpiece right there. Hey, no more running, boys. Hey, little dog. Hey, you just wasting plays too fast. Hey, 7-6, I'm coming to get that Popeye's chicken sandwich, boy. Extra spicy. Let's go.
I never thought he would still sound like so sweet and lovable, like on the football field. Like, I love that guy. And for the fact that he like pictures somebody holding a Popeye spicy, extra spicy chicken sandwich, and that's his motivation to go after that guy. That's beautiful.
That's motivating.
To all the young players, that's how you play the game.
I think he says Popeyes more than Popeyes.
He sounds like a Popeyes
guy. I've met other Popeyes guys.
Yeah.
You
there's,
too.
There's many of us out there.
Yeah. Well, you should all form a group or something.
It's Popeyes.
Popeyes is dumb to say. Popeyes.
What are you talking about?
What?
No, it's not dumb to say.
It's dumb to say.
It's literally Popeyes.
That's the word of the day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Literally.
But in the vernacular,
it's Popeyes.
It's Popeyes.
No, it's not.
You guys are really weirding me out.
Oh, yeah. If I took Popeyes and went on a helicopter, would that be more appropriate for
I'd
you?
I'd be on a helicopter.
Helicopter.
Addy got into me yesterday.
Helicopter?
Helicopter.
Hill.
Addy was railing on me the other day because I was with my buddy and his little girls, and they had crowns out. And Addy was like, can you say that again? And I was like, what, crowns? She was like, yeah, it's crayons.
Yeah, crayons.
Crowns. Oh, wow.
What the hell?
They're crowns.
I thought you were talking
crayons?
About, like, they were playing
I
princess.
You were talking about a crown.
Yeah.
No, they're crowns.
Crayon.
That's ridiculous.
They're crowns.
I've never heard that before.
Nah, yeah. Yeah, that was that was different.
Yeah,
did,
crowns.
Did the staff of your house growing up have like weird accents that you copied?
Crowns.
Do you say scenario or scenario?
Crayons is such a try hard thing.
Like, well, let crayons. Me pronounce every syllable here.
What are you talking about? It's literally the word.
No, it's not.
Literally.
Crowns.
They're not crowns.
I don't even know. Are you messing with me right now?
No.
Are you trying to like ninja my brain
no,
right now?
That's actually how I say it.
You're ninja my brain.
Skylar is going to grow up saying crowns.
Not if I can help it. what the hell were we talking about? Brandon Graham.
So Brandon Graham is picking up random mouthpieces. I don't know.
Well, apparently he could find his own mouthpiece throughout the game.
So he just picks up random ones. Hey, is that a mouthpiece over there?
Not.
Give me that mouthpiece there.
We're all a team here.
Hey, why not?
Well, I hope that's not the case.
I hope not
you
either.
You would have it in a situation where you would be able to identify your own mouthpiece.
I don't know. They all look alike.
You suggested earlier having the little strap thing.
Yes, maybe a strap. The little strings at the end of them. They do make those.
Why aren't the Eagles having these meetings?
I don't know. I don't know if BG likes it like that. He likes to just randomly, maybe that's extra motivation to kind of help him find a mouthpiece.
I likened it to the movie Waterboy. Boy, where they're looking at the water boy's looking at the other guys and is like, water sucks. It really, really sucks, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that what Brandon Graham does with the spicy chicken sandwich?
Maybe. It seems like it could be. Maybe he sees Popeye's chicken sandwiches all over the place. Just like, you ran out of chicken sandwiches, I'm coming to get one.
All right. I know you were laser focused all the time, blah, 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 blah. Did you have a motivating factor?
Not like that.
Not like a vision of a chicken sandwich or anything like that.
No.
It was just, I'm going to beat you.
Yeah, I want to hurt you. I want to beat you, and I want to punch you in the face. That's all I want to do.
Just you, and you rely. And
you punch you.
I want to punch you in the face.
Something about your face. I just want to punch it.
You know, see, here's the thing. Trey was probably mic'd up multiple times.
No,
and they were just
the
like,
league was like, nah, we
the
can't
league
use
was
any
like,
of that.
This is too real. He goes to too dark a place. We can't play this. Kids are going to hear it and cry.
Yeah, no, I never used something like that. But you know, hey, to each his own.
You would just wait for the Ray Rhodes pump up talk.
Yeah. Ray Rhodes talk all the time. That's why I like.
Peeing on your curtains.
Yeah, peeing on the curtains and all that. Then let's just go out and punch somebody in the mouth.
I love that. I think it's very entertaining. But the thing with Brandon Graham getting mic'd up, he is just as adorable on the field as he is off the
hilarious.
Field. It's great. And I'm very curious as to almost every player throughout the league what their little extra added motivation is to kind of get that going every single week that they got to go out there on the football field and play. I mean, that's after practice and all that stuff. All the mental preparation that goes into a football game, let alone the physical stuff that goes into it. But then once you step foot on the field itself, what it takes to get you that little edge. For Brandon Graham, we learned it's chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, there it is.
Go figure. Here's what we got for you,
by
folks.
The way, getting a lot of love on crowns. I got a lot of people just like me.
Yeah.
All right. Let's say it wrong.
All right, Popeyes.
All right, good. So, Trey, you took us through the trenches earlier today when it comes to, well, really yesterday, we got into a little bit of the opposite effect that we had today when we broke down what the Eagles offensive line would do to the Falcons defensive line. Earlier today, you broke down the Eagles D-line against the Falcons offensive line. Take us through that again in another installment of Trench Talk with Trey Thomas.
So here we go, man. We're talking about the Falcons offensive line. That's just, you know, this is the weakest point of this offense. They have all of these weapons. They have all of these weapons. You have Julio and all these other receivers. And, you know, you got Matty Ice. Well, you know, Matty Ice was sacked four times last week against the Minnesota Vikings. Sacked four times, hit seven, caused him to throw two interceptions. Also, you know, kept him under distress, and I think they could have had more sacks, but, you know, this offensive line just is struggling. I mean, they did not, they only had 17 carries for 73 yards, so they weren't pushing, getting a lot of push off the ball. So you're looking at Matthews, that was supposed to be one of the most polished tackles coming into the game. I remember at the time when he was being drafted, he was extremely polished at the combine and everything. He gave up 2 sacks last week. You know, so here you go. You got the guard in there, number 77. What's his name here? Let's get to him. Carpenter. You know, so he's okay. You got a center, Big Mac. And then you have Jamin Brown, the right guard for the Atlanta Falcons. Now, you see him out there. He gets beat a lot inside. So I see this being a game where if Fletcher Cox can see that the center is sliding left, let's start outside, give him a little inside move. Let's work some of those inside moves. The right tackles right now are really being subbed out. I don't know what's going on with their right tackle situation. You have McGarry that's starting right now. And then you have, I don't even want to
mention, Sambriallo.
Yeah. So Ty is the other right guard that comes in. I don't know what's going on right there. That's something that I'm really not a big fan of, where you're alternating tackles and stuff like that. I like for whoever you start with, you finish with. Now, here are one of the keys that I really picked up on when I'm watching this group. Jake Matthews, I know he's like the veteran of this group, but
the left tackle,
he gives away if it's run or pass based off his stance. If it's a pass play, that left foot is extended really back when he's in a 2-point stance. If it's a run play, he gets a little bit more balanced in his stance. He's more balanced so that he can get ready to run block or whatever. That is a big no-no when you're playing tackle, just because you start picking up on that when you're watching film. So he's going to give away run versus pass based off of his stance. Now, if you're the type of player that likes to look for a hitch in the offensive line, I remember I was talking earlier about how back in the Colts day, when they had Freeney and all of them back in the day, how they were the fastest off the ball. They weren't looking at the ball. They were looking for players that had hitches in their stance. So what I mean by hitch is like maybe your butt drops or your ankle flexes or something happens before you move. And a lot of players have it. But for when you're looking at this group right here, the number 51, their center, Alex Mack, he has a hitch. His knees bow out. Something happens right before he snaps the ball. So if you're looking for a key as a defensive lineman, I would say look at his knees, and then don't even worry about the ball. Look at his knees, because once those knees hit, you go. So that's one of the things that I'm just looking at this offensive line, because we're going to have to get after these guys, because, you know, you don't want Matty Ice to sit around there and throw around to all of his different receivers out there. Let's keep him under distress. I think you look back at the Jets, he was sacked 3 times in that game. And then they come back and played against Washington. They played a more solid game in their third preseason game. But then they come back out in this game and have 4 sacks, 7 quarterback hits. You can tell that Matt Ryan does not trust these guys. So I think that this is another game where our defensive front should go out there and feast against these guys.
There you go. That has been your latest installment of Trench Talk with Trey Thomas.
I can't even believe it.
Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool.
All right. Here's a question I butchered to you earlier, and I'll try to ask it properly this time around. So as much as they struggled as a run defense, though, just to go back to their defense for a second, because I meant to ask you this yesterday. As a run defense, they had the ball ran down their throat against the Vikings. So now they're coming up against a team with a little bit of a different attack, more of a high-flying passing attack like the Eagles, right? So if you're going to face a team like that, like the Eagles have, rather the Vikings, are you going to try to focus in on your run defense so you don't make that same mistake? Or are you going to try to make sure you take away that deep ball with a guy like DeSean Jackson?
You're going to try to take away the big play. Because you'll rather just, you know, be a bend don't break type of approach when it comes to defensive play. You don't want that big play, because that big play will suck the air out of the stadium, will take the momentum off your team. So I think they're going to go in and focus like, all right, you know what? We just saw how DeSean Jackson went out there and lit up with Washington, how Carson went out there and had the type of game that he had against Washington. So what they're going to do is try to prevent those big plays. And if you can run the ball on them, run the ball on them. That's all right. We keep everything in front of us.
don't allow those big plays, because there's nothing like a big play to really suck the air out of your team.
When you talked about it yesterday, you said the Eagles' offensive line had the advantage over the Falcons' defensive line. Advantage Eagles.
Absolutely.
Our O-line versus their D-line.
Yeah.
Sounds like what I'm hearing, our D-line has the advantage over their O-line.
Yeah, we do.
So the trench battle.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where the game is always won and lost. Sure. Yeah, you always give all the props to DeSean Jackson getting out there and having those big passes. Oh, that was beautiful. That was so cool. Well, you know what? His ass wouldn't have caught the ball if the quarterback wasn't being protected. I'm just saying.
You know.
Everybody always, oh, my God. Look at what that back just did. Woo! He just ran for 60 yards. Well, he got all the way to the safety without being touched. I'm just saying.
May the bitterness never leave you.
It's not bitterness. Yeah. It's just the reality.
Doesn't sound like it at
what
all.
Happens.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
This is what happens in a play.
Speaks the
Everybody,
truth.
Oh, my God. Look at Carter. He just threw the ball 60 yards in the air. He wasn't touched. Well, he should have thrown the ball.
Well, Trey, Carson gave a lot of love to the offensive linemen.
Yes, he should.
They said, you know, Carson, how'd you feel after the game? And he said, well, you know, when you don't take any hits because the offensive linemen were beasting out, it's a lot easier to feel good.
Exactly.
How about that?
Exactly. You know, that makes me feel warm.
Okay. Well, then how did you? You were tingling. I saw you when we had Jaws on at 8 o'clock. Ron Jaworski was like, "Well, you got to give credit to the offensive line and how much they blocked."
As you should.
And Trey's just there, like beaming. Trey's there, like a proud,
like a
dad.
Proud papa. Exactly.
Talk more.
Yeah.
Speak more. Yeah.
The floor is yours, Jaws.
Yes.
Do not let us.
Don't want to cut you off. I mean, you know. We are the badasses that make the offense work.
Oh, you the big sexies.
Oh, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why when we talk to Hugh, you say, hey, man, the dudes out there pose naked. They got bucket naked. That shows you what type of group you have out there, that front, man. Five badasses that say, you know what? Take the picture.
Hold on a second. Let me remove this.
Yeah, take all this
picture.
Off. Take the picture.
I'm like that.
I'm feeling myself right now. Take the picture.
So to speak.
When we talked to Hugh Lamont, Bullet Wound Douglas III yesterday, that's one thing I do regret asking, is that if, as a defensive lineman, would he be more intimidated trying to block a bunch of guys that were, as we said, nuts to butt just a couple of weeks earlier?
Yeah, he agreed. Like, that's intimidating.
He would have been like, yeah, I'm not messing with those crazies.
Yeah, that's intimidating. I mean, look at what they just be, you know, a special group to say, you know what, we're tight like that, and then you go out there and go kick Washington's ass.
Yes.
So you got to keep that going.
All right, so the battle of the trenches, you have the Eagles in both advantages.
We have a request for next week's offensive line trench talk.
Oh, what do we say?
Our buddy Rick tweets in, Trey.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.